mein auf den Supercast.
Welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 323. I'm Adam, and you are not fit to be leader. And I'd like to welcome back Andy Nunney.
Come on, Dr. Watson.
Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
The Daily What? How did you get the hold of this number?
And Mary Lang.
An intelligent alien race, and he has just wiped them out.
No Debbie this week because she's sort of on a trip with Isla. She was supposed to be providing us with some audio feedback, but technical difficulties prevented her from doing that. So it's just us. So Debbie will not win the quiz. So when I ask you later on, who do you think is going to win the quiz? I think it might not be particularly wise to pick Debbie because she's not actually in the quiz. Okay, just a bit of a tip for
you. What if I pick her anyway?
Yeah, I always pick Debbie.
That would be silly. But there you go.
I think that's my job, to be silly.
I think the rules dictate that you're only allowed to pick people that are actually in the quiz on that particular occasion. Now, I'm going to show you this. Right? I've never shown you this before. This here, see this thing here? If you're a viewer on the show. If you're a viewer of the show, it's back to front, but it's a little piece of paper. See that? A little piece of paper. Which says, Seriously Dead. It's a tour of a play of some variety with Fraser Hines, friend of the show. There he is, Fraser Hines. Fraser himself gave me this, but he lost interest in me once I said that I live on the Isle of Wight and they're not doing any of the shows in the south of England, so he rather lost interest.
Unfortunately, it's back to front to us as well.
I said that.
So he did say that.
Where's the closest to the south of England he's coming to?
I'll pick up from where they've... Because where is it now? We're the 30th of October, so they would now be right at the end of the door. Rotherham, Lincolnshire, Runcorn, Mansfield, Wakefield, Dartford. The furthest
south of England.
Is it?
It's not
near enough
Dartford
me.
Dartford's gone on the M25.
Yeah, not near enough me. Birmingham, Telford, Burnley, Weymouth. Weymouth.
Birmingham, Telford,
Weymouth would have been the furthest.
My hometowns.
Weymouth would have been the furthest south for me, but it's still quite a long way. For me to get to.
Why don't you go all the way to Cardiff to the Doctor Who Experience, and that's not close enough?
Well, it's a bit off track, isn't it, from where we were going. And besides, Weymouth, what date was Weymouth? Weymouth was on the 13th of October, and I'd only just got back from Newcastle, and I was probably working anyway, so I wouldn't have been able to do it either way.
How long did it take you to get to Cardiff?
2.5 hours, something like that.
Oh, jeez.
What? What's wrong with that?
Distance is there, just amazing.
you guys complain about, things are too far away. Things are too far away, and 2.5 hour drive is nothing.
Did I say it was anything? You asked me how long. It was 2.5 hours from Southampton, plus some hours around the ferry. Right, I just want to remind listeners, before we move on to talking about Doctor Who and the Silurians, a title of a story really irritates me because it's got the words Doctor Who in it. Last time, I did a competition, which no bugger could be bothered to enter. The competition was for the lovely Rob Shearman, who provided us with this, which is a 20-megabyte calling card and a little doodle that he's done specifically for the person who is supposed to win the competition. Nobody obviously wants it. So... this now goes to... Hang on, I've got it down
here
somewhere.
Then?
No.
Oh, what's the point of telling us then?
Because it says exterminate all listeners of the 20 megabyte podcast. You're not a listener.
We listen.
No, I listen. I always listen back.
Yeah. I always listen. Dropping
MP3, listening back.
This here is a package for Jeff Waddle. Right? This here is a card. Yeah? Right? The thingy. This here package for Jeff Waddle. I'm just about to undo. Card for Jeff Waddle in package. I know even Jeff couldn't be bothered to enter the competition, but at least he showed enough interest in a certain bit of artwork, which I'm going to send him. So, congratulations, Jeff.
Yes, congratulations.
And thanks nobody for not bothering to enter the competition. So, no more competitions on the 20 megabyte podcast.
No!
I can't enter.
Hey? No. Because you're not listeners. Right, there's moving on.
We are listening.
I was. And I won.
Down,
when
I,
I won one of the very first competitions.
Yeah. You were a listener then, you're not now. You don't hardly listen to the show anyway. The amount of times I refer to things in previous episodes and you don't know what I'm talking about. Okay, right. The Silurian.
Master. Speaking of listening to a show, the 3-hour show of the convention.
Yes.
You did directly address me and dealing with Colin.
Yes.
He would have remembered. First of all, he would not have necessarily remembered me in Huntsville because I just barely saw him, even though he did remember me. He saw me and remembered me. But it was in Clarksville, Tennessee,
yes,
where I was to carry him around. And if you had reminded him that I was the person who took him to get a haircut.
Ah, so that didn't spring to mind when I was talking to him, so I apologize for that. But I thought the thing that's most likely to jog his memory was somebody called Kirby, because he did go on about Kirby wires and Kirby clips and stuff like that, and it didn't, and I apologize for that, but we'll try again one day, because I'm bound to see it again at some point, I'll have to make a note of what I'm supposed to ask him. Okay, can we move on? Silurians starts in Wookie Hole. Oh no, it's not Wookie Hole, it's just a studio cave.
No, it's not.
And some potholers in their potholer uniform get scared.
That's
by a
still
puppet.
So strange. That's not what we call them here. They're cavers.
Anyway,
don't
argue. It's only a turn of phrase. A sort of dinosaur-y thing. Bit of CSO in this. I think that was probably the first time it had been used in Doctor Who.
This is the very first CSO, I believe.
And
in the show.
Yeah, obviously very expensive in those days to use CSO, so it was only about 3 or 4 seconds long. But anyway, the Doctor's got Bessie. Bessie's not working particularly well at the moment. He's just trying to tune her up.
I love the way he drips the stuff into the front and says that time and walks his way through and follows it through and instantly, boom! And that's it. Perfect.
That was the end, though, wasn't it? That was at the end, though.
Some sort of digital adjective you can put in cars are the same. Because I used to have an old car, I'd put it in, and suddenly the massive black smoke on the back of the car, and it would take off like a rocket. So I just wondered the same thing he used.
It might have been, you never know. Anyway, so we get a lovely shot of him driving Bessie through some rural village. Love to know. Oh, but Kirby's going to tell me what the rural village is.
Of course.
Go on.
Hang on a second.
Oh, I thought you'd know off the top of your head.
No, I had the video going over the browser.
Oh, are you allowed to do that without
that
any...
That would be... Hankley Common in Rushmore, Surrey.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Oh, there, obviously.
And obviously quite nice weather on the day. So they...
Andy?
Yes?
In one of the later episodes, we see all those transmitters, which are supposed to be a unit thing. That is in Guildford.
What about?
Hogsback Transmitter Station.
The Hogsback? Well, the Hogsback is about 4 or 5 miles west of Guildford. So we're doing this here. So, can you send me a link to that thing, Kirby? I'll see him pop over there, maybe get some pictures, see, whatever is there. What I want to do is actually, I know for the last story, you said you wanted to know what the town looked like where the Autumn came to life. I actually went there about 4 or 5 years ago, and I got pictures of the shop front where they used it.
So, Guildford is in Surrey?
Yes, it's where I live.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought.
Yes.
Okay, I'll post a link to all of the locations.
Can we move on?
A series of hills, and it's just outside Guildford. It's about 4 or 5 miles away. So send me a link, and I'll see if I can go there.
I will post a link to all of the locations for this story on the Facebook page.
It is a seven-part story, by the way. Can we get moving? So the Doctor and Liz have been summoned to this facility because there's some odd things going on with power drains. And
they run across Nider.
Yeah.
Nider, of all people.
Yeah, who's similar sort of character, really. He's not very happy. What's his character's name again? Dr. Lawrence or something?
Dr. Lawrence.
Not happy with the presence of UNIT or the Doctor. or anybody for that matter, apart from his own team. And then we also meet that chap from Porridge, Fulton Mackay.
Oh, God, yes.
Whose character in this is completely different to the character he plays in Porridge.
What's Porridge?
A lot more smarmy.
It was a comedy about life in a prison camp. Have you ever heard of Ronnie Barker? Does that name anything to you? Right, he was the lead character.
Two Ronnies.
He's the two Ronnies, yes. He was a convict who was inside, and Fort Mackay was a particularly nasty, sadistic prison officer.
Yes.
And having been a policeman myself and worked with prison officers, he was fairly typical of what most prison officers were actually like. Mm. They were not exactly pleasant, shall we say.
Yeah, anyway, yeah, so he, yeah, look, if you wonder what Porridge is, either Google it or look it up on YouTube. There's loads of clips available, and there's also lots of stars in it that were in Doctor Who and other programmes around the same sort of time, including Christopher Biggins, who played a rather camp character in it as well. And, of course, there's lots of people playing little bit parts throughout the series. I digress slightly, thanks to you lot. Anyway, yeah, so as we were saying, Fulton Mackay played Dr. Quinn. Was it Dr. Quinn? Surely there was a series about Dr. somebody Quinn. Called Dr. Quinn, wasn't there?
Medicine Woman.
Yes. The first episode essentially sort of just going over, there's a chap that's sort of gone a bit, he's regressed a little bit, he's drawing pictures of Silurians. We didn't know there were Silurians at the time, but you can guess from the fact that the series is called Doctor Who and the Silurians, on the wall, and the Doctor sort of goes up to him and gets nearly throttled. He seems to, characters and baddies in this particular area of Doctor Who seem to like trying to throttle the Doctor. We had a bit of that in the previous story. I was going to write a question for the quiz, and that was, what was the number on Quinn's jacket? But I never got around to doing it. But just in case you wonder what it was, it's 11634. The Brigadier is still wearing his uniform from the last story, but I heard there was an issue with the uniforms, apparently.
He doesn't like the... Nicholas Courtney did not like that particular style of uniform. Mm.
Why? What was wrong with it?
I don't know.
What did he like?
I don't think he liked the way it fit or something.
Is it the same uniform they used in Invasion?
Yes.
Yeah, it is.
These go all the way back to Invasion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they only lasted this series as well.
And speaking of clothes, I mean, did you notice the big change in Liz Shaw? My goodness.
What, shorter skirts, you mean?
fluffy hair, bows in her hair, you know, short skirts.
Yeah.
I mean, that she went from, you know, very competent scientist, you know,
to a very sexy scientist.
Genius, to now she's, you know, you stay here.
Yes, surprising she was pregnant by the end of the series. And carry on.
Master.
Yes.
As is pointed out in the info text, she actually, they did very careful planning with her outfits. She wears basically three different outfits, and as the days progress, because mm-hmm. this takes place over several days, mm-hmm. you can see her shifting back and forth between them like she had to very carefully. Well, she left in such a hurry that she just stuffed these three outfits in her case. And okay,
can I just interrupt to give you to the ladies? The lovely Dawn just here. I want to say quick, say hello.
Hi.
Hello to the lovely, wonderful...
Hi.
Hi.
Poor old lovely Dawn. No, she's lovely. Sorry. How is the lovely Dawn?
Yeah, okay. What? Not too bad. How's everybody?
Are you all right?
Are you getting
even
sleep
having
night,
to live with Andy?
Stormy's not too bad. He had a cold a couple of weeks ago.
Goodness, you guys are calling him Stormy.
Sure, why not?
Yeah. There were some pictures posted of him.
He'll grow up with a name, he'll have no idea where it came from.
There were some pictures in post online looking a bit messy after eating. He obviously gets that from his dad.
Yes, sadly. But yes, we'll have to iron that out.
Well, nice anyway, talking to you, Don.
Sorry?
I said it's nice talking with you.
Ah. Yes.
Did you get to see the Silurians?
No, I didn't.
Oh,
it's nice that we've now got onto the John Pertwee era, much more flamboyant character.
Yes.
Yes, enjoying that so much more.
Hmm. Well, yes. Well, I think Troughton was slightly flamboyant, but not quite as flamboyant as John Pertwee.
Some people like Pertwee.
I happen to have a sonic screwdriver here, which is one of Pertwee's ones.
Yes, that was playing with our sonic screwdriver earlier on, wasn't he?
Yes,
he
was.
What did he manage to fix?
Not a lot, sadly.
Okay.
He could have sort of zapped the garden and just whipped that into shape for us. He could have... one of the panes on our conservatory is actually broken into mm-hmm. fragments. He could have
said, Daddy, can you fix it?
Oh, there you go.
But never mind. Anyway,
yes.
I'll let you carry on and enjoy.
Yes, thank you.
Speak to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Anyway, where did we get up to? The doctor is heading
down. We were talking about Liz's tiny little satchel, but she managed to have three entire outfits.
No, she had two outfits she in it, and then she wore the other one, and she'd shift back and forth.
Well, look, every woman's handbag has a black hole with a strap attached in
it. I know.
You're right, Andy.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on. So the doctor goes down to investigate the... strange goings-on in the caves, and then something startles him. And then we have a very rare thing in this particular series of Doctor Who, the end of the episode without the sting, because that is coming to an end. Sting is coming. And I've just clicked on the wrong button there. Yes?
They built this dinosaur suit. It's like 9 feet tall or something like 7 feet tall. Mm-hmm. And they have to hold up the head with a wire mm-hmm. attached to a gantry above the set.
Yes.
It didn't occur to them that they could have made a puppet for a lot cheaper, because it's only in like two scenes.
It did occur to them in a later episode, obviously, Carnival of Monsters, when they
yes.
did make some puppets. Anyway, yes. Like you say, that is what scared the doctor. And there was this strange noise, wasn't there? Sort of bleep, bleep, bleep noise, which was getting a bit annoying by episode.
That was
seven.
So annoying.
Yes, it was.
And they that managed to call the monster away. And then we have this other chap, Baker, wasn't it? Was it Baker?
The ex-major.
Yeah, Major Baker, whose eyes were very manic. There was a sort of madness to his face. It might have just been the actor.
It just was slightly weird, wasn't it? I think he's he'd been mentally damaged by what had happened before him.
Yeah.
Master?
Hmm?
Master?
Yes.
We later, he was Chrisong and the Abominable Snowman. Right. He's Norman Jones is the actor.
Oh, he was!
But we will also see him as Hieronymus in Mask of Mandragora.
We will. Well done, Kirby.
Ooh, something to look forward to.
If I had my bell, I'd ding it for you, but as I've still not found it
Where's
yet.
Where's your bell?
It's still not come back to me yet. It's probably under a pile of stuff.
And don't forget, we have one more person who's been in old and classic Who and modern Who in this story.
Mm. Have we?
Yes, Geoffrey Palmer.
Of course.
Mm.
Of course he has. It doesn't matter. We're moving on. He was the captain, by the way, on the Titanic, if you're wondering, Andy. I was quite impressed with the prop they had on the wall, which essentially was their version of the warp core. Well, I thought that was quite an interesting effect, that.
Oh, that, you know what that is?
No, what is it?
It's one of those things that you used to always see with rock concerts. It's oil on water with speakers going into it, so...
Was it?
Yeah.
What?
The big round thing on the wall of the sort of inner sanctum.
Right, the back of it is it's oil in water, and then they play speakers through it to make the colors shimmy. You used to see it in like old rock concerts, like the Mamas and the Papas would have one of those on the back wall being projected.
Okay. That was before my time, though, so we'll move on. But thanks for that anyway, Kirby.
All right, that's just one I can picture in my mind a particular concert with in it with that. But it, you'd see it all over the place. I remember seeing it in a Who video. It's in the Who.
Anyway, moving on. The Who, yes. I think Majors, he sort of persuades them to go down the caves, and then a Silurian turns up and gets shot by Baker. And
yeah, I think he just panicked, didn't he? I think that's actually part of what's happened to him before.
Yeah.
Was the situation he panicked and shot before,
But
and saved again.
For some reason, the Silurian goes to the surface and wanders around up, you know, on Earth rather than back down to where his doctors maybe could have actually helped him out. And he goes and kills a couple of people in a farm and hides in a barn. And the doctor. Oh yeah, and then we find out that Dr. Quinn is in league with the Silurians. He's the one that I think is manipulating these power sort of losses so as the Silurians can gain power and wake up again and wake up more of their kind.
Yeah, Miss Dawson's a bit wet, isn't she? Because she's following, blindly following him. You know, whether she's partly in love with him or not, I don't know.
I think she probably is.
It's a bit pathetic, the way she just follows him. Why? What does she think she's going to get out of this?
Well, exactly. Then we have a scene that reminded me a little bit of the previous story, which was Spearhead from Space, where the farmer gets done in by the Silurian, and then the farmer's wife, which reminded me of the wife of the bloke last week, comes in and screams and holds her face and stuff. Just reminded
me. I don't know, that other woman, I mean, she had the balls to, load a rifle and shoot the alien that came for her.
She stood up herself, didn't she? Really, she did quite well.
This one just screams and faints.
Yeah. and then, of course, Nida does quite a lot of moaning. You think he spends the whole story moaning. But there you go.
Master. Yes. I just posted a link on the Facebook page to the Wikipedia article on Liquid Light Show. Or I had to click post on it. But that's what the thing is.
Thank you, Kirby. So meanwhile, of course, the doctor goes and visits the rather shocked wife. She'd be a bit. I think she watched her husband get killed, didn't she not? So she would be a little bit on the shocked side. While Liz is left at the barn to pick up some bits of straw and try and gather some evidence. And then they quickly realise that the Silurian might still be in the barn and that Liz is in a spot of bother, which is quite funny. Then we have another episode without a sting. Episode 3. How did they actually get out of that one? I think the police turn up just at the right time, so she doesn't get done in.
They find her unconscious.
I mean, that's it, yeah. She falls over and then the police runs away, yeah. Mm.
I find it interesting that the first contact with the Silurians causes that guy to go crazy and mental and, whatever else he did. And then people are, screaming and dying of fright seeing them. And then at each next encounter gets less and less. Liz just passes out for a little bit. The doctor's not impressed at all.
Well, if you'd seen all that rubber and latex, it might have made you faint,
But, I mean... We start with this extreme reaction, and then each encounter after that gets less, horrific. Mm-hmm. Until now, they're just practically shaking hands with the Silurians.
Yes, never mind. I suppose that's a bit. I hadn't thought of that one, but it's a very.
Or you a Silurian?
No, I
yes.
Yeah. Very good point. Are you a Silurian? I did think that's a bit of a weird line. Yes, Kirby.
Yes.
In the scenes in the barn, when I believe it's Dr. Quinn comes in through the rain to meet the doctor and Liz, he gets out of the car, comes through the rain, walks in the door, and he's soaking wet, and cut to another angle, and he's completely dry instantaneously.
That happens a few times in Doctor Who, doesn't it? That
people it's are just wet the English weather, people dry up.
Anyway, right. So we were talking about Liz and what happened. I've got to go back now. Oh yeah. So Dr. Quinn has
medicine woman.
has been given a little device for summoning Silurian, which, bearing in mind that most of the time they just talk to each other, seemed a bit superfluous. Anyway, yeah, so his idea was that he was going to kidnap the Silurian when once summoned, and force him into giving him lots of secrets about Silurian technology. So that was his plan. And yeah, meanwhile, Baker is in the hospital wing, and Liz has got a plaster on her face, and he's even more manic now, this Baker chap.
Oh, he's definitely
see that he's Hieronymus.
He's mentally unbalanced by now, isn't he? He's got to be.
Yeah, but he does play character very well. Very good. Liz, I'm just trying to see how long she keeps that plaster on her face for. I haven't really noticed that until. Oh yeah, and then they.
I think it's only one episode, wasn't it?
They find the little ball with the which Liz works out as a map of the world before the continental drift. What was Dr. Quinn's fancy piece called again?
Miss Dawson.
Yeah, she goes, pays him a visit, but doesn't get any joy out of him. And the doctor goes to visit him and finds him dead. He does play dead well, doesn't he?
Yes, he's
getting better.
It's bizarre because he's just sitting in his chair and he's, you know, it's like no reason why, you know, how he's been killed and it like that. He's dead, isn't he?
He's just dead.
And then Silurian comes around the corner and the doctor looks all shocked.
Are you a Silurian?
Right, I'm trying to keep a track of the other Grand Prix while doing this. So yeah, so are you a Silurian? And he has a.
I'm
short...
assuming they're racing around in turns and stuff.
He says basically.
You've seen it before.
Yeah, he's basically trying to say, "Oh, come on, I'll help you," and then the Silurian chap runs off, presumably back to where he should have run in the first place, which is back to the Silurian base. What was that? Hang on, the dog wants to come in. Come on, get in. Come on, Magic. Magic is in the room. Magic, come here. Come here.
Well, in the meantime, I see that Avon has got his stripes, being an assistant to the brig.
Yeah, he's done really well as Avon. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on.
Master.
Yes.
There's various playing the old Silurian and the young Silurian and the Silurian scientist. None of those actors provided voices. The voices for all the Silurians were Paka.
Yes, I know.
They were Peter Halliday.
They were indeed. Yes. Hang on, I've got a burp coming. That's better. Right.
Since when have you warned us about that?
Hang on. I'm not feeling very well today. Deb's not feeling well either. I had a real bad tummy today. Alicia came round. She's already had a bad tummy, but that was a few days ago, so we presume that it wasn't contagious. Me and Deb did have a bit too much Prosecco last night, so we're thinking it might have been a...
lightweight, blimey.
Anyway, moving on. Yeah, so what happens next? So the doctor go. Oh, Doctor and Liz go down the caves this time, and sneak into the Solarium base using the little summoner thing that the doctor nicked off the dead Dr. Quinn's body. What is it when you steal things from dead bodies? There's a word for it, isn't there?
Grave robbing.
Something like that, yeah. And then when they go in there, they find Baker locked in a cage. And I think. Yeah, so Baker tells them that they... Oh, and then they see the... Is it another CSO monster, or has it just appeared for a gap?
It's the same one.
Yeah, but is it CSO? That means they've used CSO twice in this story. The budget must have been blown the budget quite big on that one. Lawrence keeps on saying, a load of nonsense, nothing down there at all, these idiots, blah, 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 blah. And then the chap from...
He never believes that there's anything.
Yeah, I mean, he must be really quite deluded, the fact that he just refused to accept what he's seeing in front of his eyes. Yeah. I mean, how can you just ignore that?
I don't know. It's weird, isn't it? And then the chap from the Ministry turns up, the Undersecretary, played by Jeffrey Palmer. and with his quiff. Very, he must have been quite a young Geoffrey Palmer when he did this episode, but he'd be in his 90s, I would have thought now, because he's been around a long time.
But you notice, whatever role he plays, it's always himself. I don't remember seeing him do anything that is a stretch beyond, you know, who he probably is.
Have you seen?
He's 89 right now.
Oh, he's 89. Have you seen the character he plays in Fawlty Towers? Very similar to this character.
Yeah, yeah. The doctor. Like I said, he plays himself all the time.
So basically there's a conversation between him and Dr. Lawrence moaning about the unit and the doctor. I was calling them Cybermen because the way they do that thing with their heads, they when the Cybermen came back in Revenge of the Cybermen, they sort of used a similar sort of they had the guns in the heads, didn't they? So I don't know why I said that. There's not a lot going on, really. I'm trying to skip through bits because it's quite a drawn out. The doctor
I'm shifting to the second disc now because I don't have it on.
Yeah, I haven't got
Blu-ray.
A second disc. I'm still on the first disc at the moment. Blu-ray, is it available on Blu-ray?
Oh, no, it's not. I'm sorry.
No, I was gonna... So the doctor eventually gets kidnapped or locked up with the doctor, with Baker. The evil Silurians is going to kill him, and he wiggles his head, and the doctor then goes all cross-eyed and starts flaking out as if he's going to be killed. I think even at the time, Doctor Who fans would have thought it's very unlikely they're going to kill the doctor at this stage of the story. The cliffhanger part of it is, how's the doctor going to get out of it? And I would have thought, when watching it, the likeliest way the doctor was going to get out of that situation was somebody was going to come and interrupt the Silurian doing the killing. Anyway, I'm just trying to pad it out a bit because the next DVD's got to load while we do this.
You could pad it out by going and getting some oil and oiling your chair.
How much? It won't. It's a spring issue. It's nothing to do with oil. Hamilton's.
I can still bug you about it.
Hamilton is still leading the Grand Prix, Andy.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Just wait.
While we're padding the time, isn't the music in this one really strange? Those unusual instruments and. Yeah. I mean, it was effective, but kind of annoying too.
Yes, yeah. It is. It's a crumb horn.
Yeah, the thing is, though, I think it's quite good because. You know, when you hear these pieces of music, you can tie them specific to Doctor Who stories. There was a few bits of music they used in the 60s, which were used in several Doctor Who stories. But there's some very distinctive pieces of music which are bespoke to certain Doctor Who stories. And I think that's quite a good thing about this era of Doctor Who. God's sake. At least I gave a warning.
I don't warn people. Sorry.
No. By the way, Andy.
Yeah, well,
Lewis won the Grand Prix. Lewis has just won the Grand Prix. Lewis Hamilton.
Where did Rosberg finish?
Second.
Right, so it's still not good for Hamilton then.
Well, better than it would have been if Rosberg had won the Grand Prix.
Well, yes, okay, but he still needs him not to finish.
Right, yeah, episode right. 5.
Wait, are they racing at night?
This is the Mexican.
No, it's in Mexico.
Oh, okay.
So it's daytime for you because you're totally out of sync with the rest of the world.
Wasn't the US Grand Prix last week?
No. How should I know?
Well, hang on, this has got me into. Can I have a quick political interjection here? Watching from afar, and because there's going to be an election in the United States soon, how on earth did they manage to get in the United States two complete imbeciles as a choice to run their country? At the end of it.
Well, we had Farage last time round, and who's the idiot Green Labour?
We were hearing that about your country, too.
I don't know.
I mean, to listen to Jeff Waddle, everybody is an idiot over there.
No, I don't know. Okay. Yeah. Well, I don't. There's a no-win, no-lose situation, yeah, I think, in the American elections at the moment. So, okay.
Well, nobody who's really decent wants to run because all kinds of mud gets slung no matter.
Yeah, that's a very underhand way of playing it, though, isn't it? Before they found these things about Clinton, it's like Trump was just trying to throw the obviously her husband getting blowjobs as part of a political argument. You know, well, it's ridiculous. And then, of course, you're thinking...
because they're picking on him and his sexism.
I know.
So he was throwing sexism back at them.
Let's look at how they will be doing... Clearly, neither of them are fit to run the country, because...
Will you guys let me know when you're done talking about this?
Yes.
I agree that neither one is fit.
We're moving on back to Doctor Who. But I just thought...
We're going to talk about Doctor Who again? Okay, I'm back.
We might not have done an episode before the
American election. You've already voted.
Yes.
Can we move on?
I had to wait two hours in line.
When is the election anyway? It's a matter of interest. When is the election?
The 8th, which is Tuesday.
So we might not have had an episode between now.
Tuesday week.
So I thought I might as well mention something about it. So like I said, surprise, surprise, there was an interruption to stop the Doctor getting done in by one of the Silurians. I'm the leader. I am the leader. I will not seek to be leader. You could hear his voice, couldn't you?
Yes.
So it's a shame that Avon was only in this story. I mean, obviously he was in the future Doctor Who story, but was not retained as a unit officer, because I quite liked him in this.
I liked him too. But then maybe he would not have gone on to Blake 7.
The Doctor, meanwhile, is trying to talk the leader into living in the desert areas on the surface of the planet. That's not going to work, really, because there's probably more Silurians. You know, you fill up the deserts, where else are they going to go? You know, they can't just live in the desert. It's never going to work. It's a stupid idea.
The jungles around the equator, you know, there's other places for them.
Yeah, they're not going to stay there. It's like saying that, you know, humans go into the deserts, don't they? They don't like it, but they still go in there because there's oil and stuff like that. So that would be an argument. Mm-hmm. Imagine that the Silurians own the deserts. They live in the deserts, but that's where the oil is. Oh, no, humans, you can't have the oil. Not going to work. Doctor's thick in this particular story.
How true.
So anyway.
Did they back in the 70s that there was all that oil?
I'm not sure, actually. Anyway, the bad Silurians keep on going on about humans being apes, and we can't have the world run by apes. We were here first, blah-de-blah-de-blah.
Isn't it quite interesting, because you compare that to what's going on at the moment with all the xenophobia in the UK, of people wanting, you know, all the asylum seekers kicked out of the country. Yeah. So you say there's a lot of comparison now. There's no less of bigotry, really, isn't it?
We haven't changed, have we?
No, unfortunately, there's still too many bigots in this world.
That's making Donald Trump so popular here is that same...
It's fear, basically. It's fear. And also, I mean, it's like with this Muslim thing. I mean, what they need to do, instead of calling these ISIS... Magic just kicked me in the nuts. That was really painful. Instead of calling the people that are sort of part of ISIS, I'm going back to politics again, Muslims, no, they should just call them jihadists, because that's basically what it is. They're different.
Yeah.
They're not the same, but people put them in the same bundle. But anyway, moving on. It's all racism in the end of it.
Yeah, we don't care about Muslims. We just care about the jihadists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's horrible, because I thought racism was dying out, but it's getting worse now. It's just this in the last year or so. It's terrible. Moving on, Doctor Who. It's a point, because obviously there's a lot of there's a racist element to this story, basically.
Well, because in the 1970s, you think there was a lot. It was almost acceptable then, wasn't it?
And
you
again,
know, people just weren't.
Again, this is a fear thing. The humans, but specifically the Brigadier, is absolutely petrified of what the Silurians could do, especially when they come up with this idea of genocide using, bacterium. Because the Doctor, again, he's trying to do a peaceful thing, and then he suddenly realises that's not going to work, because they've infected Baker. Baker then infects... Who is it?
The undersecretary, what's his name?
And they start flying around, finding all these people and touching them. I know they've been given some sort of antibiotic thing, magic mystery. Why did they just give everybody this antibiotic, instead of worrying about getting the antidote, whatever they call it? Because that seemed to work. Didn't affect Liz or the Doctor. They just got a bit tired, but then they were all up all night trying to do this... have their lab. And
don't you find it odd that the virus jumps from London to Paris without anybody in between getting infected?
I didn't think of that one, actually. But I did quite enjoy all the exterior scenes of the, from the hospital and stuff like that. And the doctor and is working hard to try and find the antidote. And the little the little representation of the under the microscope of this throbbing sort of thing going on. So I wasn't unaware that the microbes throbbed like that while under the microscope. But yeah, it was quite funny. And of course, then the doctor has a eureka moment, literally.
Yes.
Just before getting kidnapped by the Silurians again. And but. While everyone's dying around the world, Liz is clever enough to find some of the doctor's notes, and just to, so as it makes the end of episode 6 less complicated, she manages to procure a serum that saves everyone.
Yeah, because she suddenly realised, oh, you know, one look at the screwed up piece of paper, the fact that might be the one he was holding, the last thing he was holding.
Yeah,
it's blatantly obvious,
wasn't it? Yeah. Oh, hang on, what's happened there? I clicked the wrong button. But at the end of episode 6, the doctor gets sort of knocked out by the Silurians, and of course his eyes go a bit crossed, as they seem to do in the early days of...
Just step away from the microphone for a couple of minutes. I can hear Stormy, so just give me a couple of minutes and I'll be back in a second. Okay,
don't you English call that gurning or something?
No, gurning, your mouth goes a bit funny when you gurn.
Oh, okay.
You know, like people tend to do when they cry and their mouth goes a bit, some people. That's a bit funny.
Okay.
So the doctor has. I love the effect, actually. I thought that was quite a clever effect when the Silurians went through the wall. When the wall was repaired and the way they'd use the smoke and the. That's quite cleverly done for the time, I thought.
For a while, you forget that these offices are down in caves.
Yeah.
Until they come through that wall. And they are in a cave.
The lift conveniently
doesn't work.
Well, it's not convenient. It's part of the story. The leader of the Silurians gets killed because one of the others wants to be the leader. Not fit to be leader, so he kills him. And I am leader now.
I am the leader.
You will do what I say. And then when he realizes, obviously, when the doctor overloads what's that thing that he overloads?
The nuclear thingy.
They all decide to leg it back to their little thing, and he decides to sacrifice himself and says, "Well, you'll be leader next. You do as I say." How's that going to work? Oh, you stop fiddling with your microphone.
So that was me putting my headphone back on. Sorry, I just had to go and check on Stormy. He was chuntering a bit. That's all.
And thank you for listening to the show. Goodbye.
Come on. So, not next week then.
Everyone, the quiz.
So the Silurians run back to their base, and then there's a final standoff between the Brigadier and shoots one of the Silurians. But he does hear that somewhere along the line that the Doctor has a plan to revive them in 5 years. And I'm with the Brigadier on this one. Blow the blimmin' camp up. They're complete, obviously, psychopathic monsters. The Doctor's not happy about it.
The fact where he accused, I was going to say Joe then, but of knowing what the Brigadier was up to. Mm. And obviously she didn't. But it's quite interesting the fact he actually thought she would. I mean, just how little she trusts her.
Well, that's quite interesting because obviously Liz is UNIT. She's employed by UNIT and gets paid by them. That's why he had
She'd
that.
Obviously be fairly clear all the way through that she was behind the Doctor all the way.
Yeah.
So the fact the Doctor turned round and accused her of betraying him was quite interesting. I don't think
it happened again.
Well, he didn't because he wasn't there, was she?
No, I mean, with him and her, I think that was the only time that there was a doubt. But I thought that was quite good because they don't know each other that well. They've only just started working together, so that was okay for me. I didn't mind that. I was totally with the Brigadier. Blow the base up because we don't want any risk of these psychopathic imbeciles getting back out and causing even more trouble, learning from their mistakes, etc., etc. So the Brigadier did the right thing. Anybody think I'm wrong with that? No.
Well, I think it's the xenophobia again at that time of the year.
Well, from the way the characters were portrayed in this story, most of them were psychopathic and hell bent on taking over the Earth and killing all the humans. And
they heard from two of them.
In a war situation, I suppose I would probably be on the side of the humans, being that I am a human, and would probably back the Brigadier to protect the Earth as it is, as we know it. It is genocide on this instance, but I'm not pressing the button. I'm just saying the Brigadier's right. I think I would be behind.
Yeah. Well, and then the thing too is how do we know that they were all killed?
We
know that some survived.
Yes, exactly. So
but at this point, you know, how can we trust that they all were killed?
Indeed. So yeah, that's some.
Get them several more times in the classic series too.
No, we didn't. We only had Silurians one more time in the classic series.
Only one more time?
Yes, Warriors of the Deep. That's the only.
Okay. It was the Sea Devils at the time, wasn't it?
And the same with them.
Devils were related to Silurians.
But they're not. But then the Sea Devils and the Silurians were both in Warriors of the Deep. Yes, Magic. Magic agrees with me. Right at the end of the episode.
I've not seen either of those, so.
Ah, well, you've got a treat coming then. Anyway, as I was saying.
I've heard of the Mirka.
I know. at the end of this episode on the DVD, there was a little preview to the next story, which I thought was quite cool. Anybody see that?
Oh, yes.
Nope.
Oh, okay. Right.
Mary probably didn't watch it on a DVD.
I did not watch it on a DVD.
Okay.
Right.
Now.
Yes?
Is this the one where there's like two different versions, two different DVD releases?
There's loads of them that got two different DVD releases. I think there was a version of this came out on video in black and white with a slight colorization on some episodes. But I would say loads. There was one or two, perhaps, DVD releases. I don't know. Why? What's up?
Nope. Well, I right now I'm using... I've recently got a three-story specially boxed thing with Silurians and the other two stories that you were talking about. And, that's right. My original one was horrible.
Oh, yes.
But I've got this from something called Beneath the Surface. Sea Devils and Warriors of the Deep is also included.
Okay. Having been watching my own thread on there, I haven't realised people have actually been writing in while we've been going. It's been mainly Alan T. Butcher who said, hey, and then he said, Jeff, hang on, there's been a comment here. What's going on? Why can I not see these comments? Help me. Help. I can see Jeff, and it says pin comment. I'm not going to do that. And it says, Jeff, I've met David Hay, one of four world champions I've met.
That's me saying that.
Oh, it's you. Sorry.
Yes.
But where's Jeff's comment?
Jeff just said, for some reason, just said David Hay. I don't know why, but he is one of, say, four boxing world champions I've met.
But I can't see his comment.
I actually met him when I was out running along the embankments in Westminster one time.
But I can't see his comment on here. All I can see is...
His comment just said David Hay. That's all he said.
Oh, yeah. That was Alan T. Butcher said, hey.
Yeah.
Then Jeff Waddle said, David, hey.
But I can't see his comment.
Oh, it is there. That's what I replied to.
Oh.
And then Alan T. Butcher says, Dr. Quinn's fancy piece was Jane Seymour.
Can you
see that one?
I can see that one, and I can see you think Gonzalez would be...
I'm not even going to click on those, because then the video would start playing, and I'd have...
Yeah, don't do that, no.
Yeah, I met David Hay running along the embankment out one lunchtime. I also met Tom Baker exactly the same way. I was out for a lunchtime run and met Tom Baker.
I see what's happening with the DVD. I just went over in my...
Careful, because you're breaking up again.
I had a copy...
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Kirby, you've gone completely.
No, yeah, gone completely. You're breaking up. Can't hold it, she's breaking up. It's like Steve Austin. They're gone. Try and say it now without breaking up.
I just checked my DVDs, and my original Doctor Who and the Silurians was... I burned it myself off of a VHS copy. And that's why it was so horrible.
We don't condone this sort of behavior, listeners, by the way. Right, so...
You know, there was a time when that was the only way you could get things.
Well, but then he went on to purchase.
Yes, I purchased.
Mm-hmm.
I posted a picture of it.
I made a mistake. I'm coming. And we do condone that. Myself right, coming so through. Hang on, I can hear myself. That's better. Technical issues here. Right, now we're going to talk about what we think of this particular story. It's too long. I think all of the stories, apart from Spearhead from Space, from this particular series of Doctor Who are too long. But it, yes. Having said that, it is quite well paced and quite engrossing and enjoyable. I think it's a really good story. They could have compacted it a bit, but you know, they get away with it being seven parts, but you know, just a bit too long. But on the whole, clever, good, great acting. I think it's a good story. I can't really say much more about it. I think it's actually just quite good. What do you think, Andy?
Yeah, I quite enjoyed it. I mean, it's I think you're right. It's probably one episode too long. There's a lot going on in there, and I think there's a lot to understand about the clash of two cultures. It's very interesting. And say, you know, you look at it these days, what's going on now with certainly in the UK with the anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant feeling. Mm. So I think that's very relevant now. And, I was only about five at the time, so I'm not really sure what the political culture was like in 1970. But I mean, I do know that obviously there was a lot more overt racism in those days than there is now.
Yes.
You know, past as long. I think it did go along very quickly. You can see certainly how the Doctor was trying to turn the situation well. Now, whether you could have ended up with the Silurians having, you know, some of the perhaps more, not exotic, what's the word, tropical parts of the world, whether that would have worked or not, I don't know. And you also can understand, that, as Kirby said, the fact that there were people who, you know, understand, you know, why you try to destroy people who are really very much against you, and you have got to protect your own species. And it's interesting having one species against another. So that point of view, that worked very well.
Yeah.
You got people like Dr. Lawrence, who, I mean, I think he was mentally disturbed by the end of it, and also Baker as well, given what he'd gone through with his situation in Ireland. You can understand where that came from. Yeah. So I found it a very enjoyable. It did flow. Perhaps could have lost one episode, but getting into Pertwee, complete change of the mood of Doctor Who. Mm. I think it really moved it on, moving away from what the black and white Troughton era was.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. I think the characters in this story were very rounded and, you know, memorable. And I'm not very good remembering names of characters, but I had a better job in this story because they were characters that I could remember and relate to.
How many questions are going to be names of characters?
Kirby, what did you think?
I liked this time around.
Without breaking up, please.
I liked it a lot better this time around than I liked it 2 years ago when we reviewed it.
Okay.
It's still too long, but it actually grabbed my attention this time rather than I was bored.
Is that because you've been watching all the stories in progression? You think that's the reason?
Exactly. I think that has. And I'm hoping next week, next time with Ambassadors of Death, the same thing will happen because I hated that one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, but I enjoyed it this time around.
Good. Okay, listeners, prepare yourselves. Mary.
Well, like Kirby, I really didn't like this before, but now this time around, I found it a lot more engaging. And I think it is because we're doing these in order that I feel like we're growing with the Doctor. Mm. And Chris, we haven't gotten to the part of the Pertwee era that I dislike very much. So for now, I think things are going along pretty well. Mm. This particular story, I disagree about the acting. I think one character in particular, the Dr. Lawrence character, I mean, he starts at a high level of anger and disbelief, and he doesn't evolve. He just stays there. You know, if anything, he just gets a little bit more, you know, angry and disagreeing. And so I found him just annoying rather than the character being annoying.
Jumping on the desk.
Yeah.
Well, I enjoyed his character.
A little over the top there. And I agree, it's a little too long. Actually, I think the plague idea they just came up with that to take this on for two more episodes. Yeah. I think the whole thing with the Silurians could have been resolved in just four, at the most five episodes. As a medical person, I have to object to the doctor telling Liz that the antibiotics are probably wearing off, because antibiotics don't wear off.
Right.
But maybe they just, the writers didn't know about that.
No, they should have.
I did enjoy the dashing orange cravat that Pertwee wore with his spelunking suit. Every time he wore that down there, he had that nice little cravat. And, you know, with the Silurians, that extra eye that they destroy walls, open doors and cells, and then they build walls up. I mean, my gosh, how multi-purpose. I want a Silurian, you know, at my beck and call. You know, it's like, oh, I'd like some new linoleum in the kitchen. And well, while you're at it, you know.
A it's too bad modern. It's too bad modern Silurians don't have that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very multi-purpose tool, better than a sonic screwdriver. But yeah, overall, I have to say I enjoyed this more than the last time. Yeah.
Good. Right, we've done it. Thanks.
Yay.
We can move on to the next segment of the show, which is the feedback section. This is going to be a bit tricky.
Oh, Master, are we going to be able, are we going to discuss class at all?
Yeah, but not yet. Okay. No, we'll leave class because... Oh, no, we might have to discuss a certain part of it. I meant to watch episode two this evening, but now I've forgotten about it until you mentioned that. I saw episode one. We can sort of talk about episode two. Somebody said episode two is better than episode one. Big one?
If you haven't seen it, let's leave it. How many people have they seen episode one? I've seen the first two.
I've seen episode one.
I've seen all three.
I've seen
episode one.
First one did not encourage me to want to look at any more.
Adam, you've only seen episode one as well.
I've seen episode one. The trouble is... some of the feedback will be for more, so we just have to accept that. I'm not bothered if I... Yeah. You know.
Okay, let's leave it till next week, then, when we've actually perhaps have seen it.
No, I've got to do feedback. Anyway.
I've seen all three of them, and it gets better. Once you get rid of the Doctor, it actually gets better.
The Doctor's only in episode one.
And the major characters.
Anyway.
Oh, I do not... the geek daughter, Julia, and I, we definitely do not like April.
Yeah, see, I couldn't like any of them, so.
Oh, I like Tanya. Miss Quill is great. Miss Quill is great.
Right, I'm not going to do as good a job as Debbie on this one. Auntie Butcher says, large-scale genocide. Dear 20 megabyters, Doctor Who and the Silurians is, of course, a closely studied examination of colonial revolt and imperialistic reaction to the reemergence of indigenous culture subjected to political power vacuum. Human power experiments lead to the awakening of previous Earth indigenous, erroneously identified by the hapless Dr. Quinn as Silurians. The anachronistic.
Oh, he writes like this to trip her up. So.
I know. The anachronistic. I can't say that word. The anachronistic.
It's to make me.
Stop interrupting, and I'm trying to say these long words. Be quiet, right? The anachronisticriumvirate.
Anachronistic.
No, it's not. The anachronisticriumvirate, thank you, of Silurians clearly illustrate three reactions to their situation: peaceful and cooperative, practical and utilitarian, and finally angry and violent. The inspired insight here is by communist writer Malcolm Hulk, who is, of course, to use the Doctor as a political arbiter of peace. He identifies potential for a peaceful settlement based upon the demarcation of territory according to their non-conflicting needs, concomitant to the differing cultures evolved. Further insight. Oops, sorry, that's my sonic screwdriver. So there's a certain insight comes from the difficulty found in reaching for what could be a real consonance of mutual interests and assistance. Quinn's cynical wish to exploit Silurian culture and early skirmishes developed largely unintended reasons for distrust. Uncertainty and misunderstanding on both sides about the Doctor as arbiter makes his efforts falter, and in the end both sides stray into unreasonable behaviour, and finally the Doctor's last throw to create a space for re-initiating a rapprochement is taken advantage of by the imperialistics humans, who opt for genocide as an approach less risky to their own primacy. We also learn that Davrosian lackey Nida is less hair, had less hair as a younger man during his time of Earth, that Mr. Mackay of Slade Prison. It would help sometimes if Alan actually put punctuation and gaps between words in the right places. Mr. Mackay of Slade Prison had a secret early life as a naive and unscrupulous scientist who faked his own death, and that Avon was hiding a secretly long life, some 700 years, which reached all the way back from his time with Blake Seven to his time with UNIT in the 1970s, or was it the 1980s? Excuse me. All in all, Doctor Who and the Silurians is one of the great ideas to be employed within Doctor Who. This is one of the great stories sustained through seven episodes well, by being very much a story of two halves. Sapient reptiles or dinosaurs remains an idea not really explored to its full potential in serious science fiction. Next up, Dr. Quatermass and the Ready Breck Space Diplomats. The sci-fi hardens never harder in various parts of the electromagnetic spectrum. Those are my thoughts, Alan T. Butcher. I might send that to Debbie and force her to read it anyway.
Yes.
Paul Gobert. Now, sorry, Paul, you sent so many bits of difference of feedback, I might have to work out which one I'm supposed to play. So I don't think it's that one, actually. Let's have a go for Ian Curtin. No, we can't do that one yet. So let's play the most recent Paul Gobert bit. Because he sent a few in, then he updated it, and he updated it. So I reckon this is probably the one to go by.
Hi there, 20 Megabyte
Podcasters. It was a bit quiet.
It's Paul Gobert from Guernsey here with my feedback for Doctor Who and the Cave Monsters. I've always enjoyed this story. Even over seven episodes, it feels about right. Although it seems cruel, one of my favourite aspects is the tragic ending. I think it's pretty rare generally and really makes an impact in this case. Pertwee was great during the story, and I really like Liz too. UNIT grows into its own a bit more, and the Brig shows he's a soldier protecting the human race first and foremost. Next, the Ambassadors of Death. Also, I've watched the first two episodes of Class and thought they were really rather good. Although not clearly made for my age range, I found the cast to be engaging and the stories to be intriguing. Feels a bit Torchwoody in its execution, which in my opinion is a good thing, and I'm definitely on board for the rest of the series. At least it's better than Miracle Day. Anyway, catch you next time.
Thank you, Paul. I'll just turn it down before anybody else butts in, because I had to turn the speaker up quite loud to hear that one. Everybody hear that one all right?
Oh, no, I had trouble understanding it, but that's okay.
Yeah, I had trouble understanding it, yeah.
Ah, wow. Oh, I've got some audio feedback. Ooh. Oh, I might play this.
Large-scale genocide. Dear 20 Megabyters,
oh, he's not
Doctor Who and the Silurians is, of course, a closely studied examination of colonial revolt.
I have just gone through the whole thing of reading that out, Alan, and he's provided with audio feedback for the blimmin' right. Because I couldn't understand it, and I'm going to play it anyway. Here we go.
Large-scale genocide. Dear 20 Megabyters, Doctor Who and the Silurians is, of course, a closely studied examination of colonial revolt and imperialist reaction to the re-emergence of indigenous culture subjected to a political power vacuum. Human power experiments lead to the awakening of previous Earth indigenes erroneously identified by the hapless Dr. Quinn as Silurians. The anachronistic triumvirate of Silurians clearly illustrate three reactions to their situation: peaceful and cooperative, practical and utilitarian, and finally angry and violent. The inspired insight here by communist writer Malcolm Hulk is, of course, to use the Doctor as potential arbiter of peace. He identifies potential for a peaceful settlement based upon demarcation of territory according to the non-conflicting needs concomitant to the different cultures involved. Further insights come from the difficulty found in reaching for what could be a real continent of mutual interest and assistance. Quinn's cynical wish to exploit Siloan culture and early skirmishes develop largely unintended reasons for distrust. Uncertainty and misunderstanding on both sides about the Doctor as arbiter makes his efforts falter, and in the end both sides strain to unreasonable behaviour. And finally, the Doctor's last throw to create a space for reinitiating a rapprochement is taken advantage of by the imperialist humans, who opt for genocide as an approach less risky to their own primacy. We also learn that Devrosian lackey Nida had less hair as a younger man during his time on Earth. That Mr. Mackay of Slave Prison had a secret early life as a naive and unscrupulous scientist who faked his own death. And that Avon was hiding a secretly long life, some 700 years, which reached all the way back from his time with Blake Seven to his time with UNIT in the 1970s. Or was that the 1980s? All in all, Doctor Who and the Silurians is one of the great ideas to be employed within Doctor Who. This is one of the great stories, sustained through seven episodes well by being very much a story of two halves. Sapient reptiles and dinosaurs remains an idea not really explored to its full potential in serious science fiction. Next up, Dr. Quatermass and the Reddybrex Space Diplomats. The sci-fi hardens even harder in various parts of the electromagnetic spectrum. Those are my thoughts, Alan T. Butcher.
That was almost as good as the way I read it, wasn't it, everyone?
Yeah.
Why is that suddenly people gone loud? I'll turn you down, sorry. What do you mean, yeah? What's that supposed to mean?
Yes.
Right, so I think I haven't missed anyone, have I?
No. Ian Kirk?
Oh yeah, sorry. I did skip past that because I like to save the best till last. Right, where are we? Oh, here it is.
Hello, 20 Midnight Podcast. This is Ian Kirk. Very, very large and very, very alive. Doctor Who and the Silurians by Malcolm Hulk. Most of this story is set underground. Lots of stories are. There are more trim phones in this story. As Adam mentioned last week, the post office had a monopoly on the telephone system. The trim phone was the first alternative they offered to the standard phone, and it was a bit of a status symbol. Seven episodes is a bit long for this story. An ancient race of reptiles has awoken from artificial hibernation and want to take over the Earth. A scientist is working with them, hoping to gain from their advanced knowledge. Dr. Quinn seems to have the first Doctor's hat. The third Doctor shows no sign of recognising it. The Silurian theme uses a medieval instrument called a cram horn.
I said that.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
There was another medieval instrument called a serpent. Perhaps they should have used that one instead, because serpents are reptiles. I've watched the first episode of the new series, Class.
Leave us! We are decorating!
There is a podcast with scientist Neil deGrasse Tyson. This week he had an interview with Michelle Gomez. Spot the error in his introduction.
And so that woman who zapped this other woman out of existence, the woman who plays that is called Michelle Gomez. Mm. And she is the first woman to play the role of a Time Lord.
Time Lord, yeah.
She's the first, and so she came by my office.
Yeah, right.
Bye for now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As Doctor Who fans, we find that sort of inaccuracy very annoying. Get your facts right. Thank you, Ian. I was talking about not Ian's. He's never inaccurate. But never mind. You know what I was talking about. So that's feedback for this week, although I've got... It makes it look like we've got loads, because I've got three emails from Paul Gobert, I got an email from a chap called Archie who wants the Legion interview encapsulated and sent to him, but that's not essentially feedback. I got Ashley Hughes' feedback for Spearheads of Space, but we read that last time, didn't we? So I think I've covered everything.
Yes,
on the, So we can now move on to the next segment of the show, which is this week's edition of You Won't Get This One.
I won't.
Excuse me. Andy.
Oh, yes. Sorry, the lovely Dawn wondered what I was doing. That was
all. Did you get sidetracked?
Well, the lovely Dawn just came in to speak to me about something.
Yes. She's very lovely, isn't she?
She is indeed.
Okay.
I've had so far.
Right, Andy. Who do you think's going to be ahead at the after the question part of the proceedings?
You.
Okay. Kirby. Who do you think...
Master.
Is that your answer?
Master.
You think I'm going to be ahead, do you?
Master.
Okay. Mary, who do you think is going to be ahead at the end of the question part of this?
I think also I'm going to say Kirby.
Okay. And I'm going to say Kirby as well. Right. Okay, everybody has jokers intact. First question goes to Andy.
Hello, right.
Right, and I'm going to play my joker on this one. What was the first line spoken?
It was one of the potholders.
I know.
And he called out the other guy's name. No, not even going to get close.
So that's 2 points to me. Go on then, Kirby.
Well, this is fantastic.
And 2 points to Kirby. Right. Next question goes to Kirby.
I get 1 point.
No, you get two points. It's a joker question.
Oh.
Everything's a double.
Okay. Even though I didn't.
No, if I played my joker. Things are double.
I'll take it.
Yes, you will. Right, Andy. Kirby.
Master.
What was the name of the miner who escaped the monster at the beginning of the story? Was it Spencer, Corbett, Bartholomew, or Davis?
It was Spencer.
Nope. Anybody else? It's now three options.
Is it Baker?
Baker wasn't one of the options.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it was Corbett. Mary?
Yes?
Where should Liz and the Doctor report forthwith?
Windy Moor.
I think I know.
Sorry, say that again, Mary.
Windy Moor.
Give it to her. No. Give it to her.
No, I want to go enough. What the script is. What you said you knew anyway, Kirby. What was it?
Yeah, Windy Moor.
No.
I thought it was just for the Brigadier, wasn't it?
The answer was Limely Grove. That was the answer. Okay, next question.
What? No, disagree.
Strongly disagree. Listen, the Doctor should report forthwith to Limely Grove.
Windy Moor.
Because I replayed it and wrote down forthwith to Windy Moor.
It's Windy Moor.
I'm not sure. I might have to. Maybe the. I don't know. I can't verify.
I don't even have. Info text or subtitles.
Whatever. I don't agree with that.
I'll find the subtitle and put it out there. I'm sure it's.
I don't know. I'll have to reinvestigate that one, but there will be points deducted next week if it turns out that I'm right, which I probably am anyway. But I haven't got the energy to argue. Right then. Next question goes to Andy.
Okay, yeah.
Who was a security officer at the research station?
Baker. Major Baker. Damn it.
That's a very long answer.
Major Baker. Yeah, and I should have been Blooming Joker, shouldn't I, of course?
Kirby.
Master.
What are they trying to achieve at the research centre?
What are they trying to achieve? Yeah, yeah. It's some sort of thing dealing with energy, but I really never got a clear idea.
I never knew what they were actually doing either.
Okay, anybody? It's all very quiet, so therefore the answer is convert a nuclear energy straight into electric power. Next question goes to Mary. What was that funny noise?
Ew. Didn't
we lose that? It sounded like it, didn't it? Is everybody still there?
Yeah.
Oh, Kirby's gone. That's all right. Right.
Yeah, Kirby's gone.
Not surprised with his useless internet. Anyway, it's your question, Mary. Yeah. Minute. How much was the equipment worth?
I know.
I think that's Kirby trying to message.
Write that down anywhere. 2,000 million? No, that's not what that's about. No, I don't know.
Hang on, I better try and get Kirby back onto the call because he keeps messaging me anyway. Yeah, so that's a point to me, isn't it? Sorry, right, hang on.
Sorry about that.
Did you disconnect yourself?
I disconnected myself.
That was a bit silly, wasn't it? Right, Andy, you said so you know.
Sad. £15 million plus.
Well, what I'm going to say about that is it's correct. Right.
What did I miss?
Oh, you missed the question. Mommy, it was how much was the equipment worth? That was the question you missed. But Mary got it wrong, Andy got it right. So this is Andy's question. What job did the Brigadier give Liz?
The wonderful
sort of like answering the phones or something like that, wasn't it?
The
phones.
Nope. Anybody?
She's supposed to look at personnel,
I think. Hey! Oh, yeah, she's on the phone later, wasn't it?
No, this gifted scientist, and he keeps sending her off to do this thing.
Right, Kirby, if you're still there.
Yes, I'm still here.
How long had the disturbances been going on until UNIT came in?
I know.
Joker.
Oh.
Three months.
33 months? No, it wasn't 33 months.
Three months.
Correct. Right then. Mary.
Yes.
Who what precisely used power in enormous quantities?
The proton accelerator?
I know.
Point to me. Yes, Kirby?
Cyclotron. Ding. Thank you.
Right, Andy.
Okay.
What is the name of the doctor brought in from a local hospital? Was it Morris, Moore, Meredith, or Munro?
Meredith. Oh, Joker.
Correct, but nothing for Joker because you didn't play it before you answered the question. Kirby.
Master.
What did the doctor think of being a member of UNIT?
I don't remember that.
There, that's a shame then. You don't know the answer then?
No, I don't.
Okay, another point to me, anybody?
Mm-mm.
No, he thought it was depressing, so another point to me. Mm. Okay, next question goes to Mary. What reason did Meredith use to try and stop the doctor from seeing Spencer?
Don't remember.
Another point to me. Anybody else? No. He was on his way to hospital, was the reason and the excuse used from Rhys Parton's Book of Excuses, number 2. Okay, the scores are at the moment in last place with 3 points, it's Mary. In third place with 5 points, is Andy. In second place with 7 points, is Kirby. And in the lead with 12 points, me. Next question.
See, I was right.
Next question goes to Andy.
Okay.
What is Dr. Quinn's first name? Was it Edward, Charles, John, or James?
Charles.
Anybody?
Well, I'll try James.
I beg your pardon?
I said I'll try James.
Well, yeah. What about the question? Kirby. No, the answer was John, by the way, on that one. Kirby, what is the name of the bearded technician who seems to have a breakdown during test? Was it Richards?
I don't know.
Was it Richards, Roberts, Ramsey, or Redman?
I think I know.
I'm going to guess Roberts. Oh, my.
Mary.
Master, can I interrupt for a second?
For a second.
I'm going to post in a second when I can the subtitles from the DVD showing Miss Shaw and the doctor will report themselves forthwith to Winley Moore.
Whatever. Whose question is it now? I've lost the track now.
It's Mary's question.
Right, Mary. Minute. What had Liz worked out? Oh, that's a stupid question. Don't know. Never mind, forget that one. It says here, what had Liz worked out? The answer was that everyone affected at some point had worked in the cyclotron room. Why I wrote that down is a question I do not know. I apologise. You can have this one instead, Mary. Who composed the incidental music for Doctor Who and the Silurians?
That how many times, and I've never wrote it down.
Well, that's a thank you point for me. Anybody?
Kiri Blyden.
Oh. Next question goes to Andy.
Okay.
When the Brigadier refuses to allow Liz to go along on the potholing trip, what rhetorical question did Liz ask the Brigadier?
Why, we all know this one.
Yeah, that's really,
there's an easy one.
No, it's going to be like, you know, are you a man or something like that? No, I'm not going to.
Anybody?
No.
No.
I thought Mary might have got that one. So if nobody knows, then it's another point for me. The answer was, have you ever heard of female emancipation?
Oh.
Right. I have lost track of whose question that was now.
She obviously hasn't, because she's sort of gone backwards in her.
Whose question was that? I think that was
mine.
Okay, if that was that, then this one's Kirby's.
Master?
What did the Silurians give Dr. Quinn to help him to find the injured one?
Oh, I know.
Now, there are options here.
Call that thing?
There are options.
Oh, good.
The options are a summoning device, a homing device, a seeking device, or a tracking device.
Oh, I know.
Summoning device.
Yep.
Mary.
Yes?
What is the name of the farmer's wife where the Silurian hid? Was it?
Yes, I know.
Edna, Maud, Joan, or Doris?
Oh, no.
I'll play my joker. It's Doris.
Yep.
Next question goes to Andy.
Okay.
Oh, God. Next question goes to Kirby. All right, just for the fun of it, Andy, just for the fun of it, who provided the voice for the Silurians?
I have no idea.
Oh, my God.
I know.
No, I haven't got it written down. No,
Kirby's been trumpeting it all along.
Yes, go on, Kirby.
I know.
It's Peter Halliday.
Packer?
You know, Packer?
No, I'm
going to
run down.
Okay, Kirby.
Master?
What was the name of the farm?
What was the name of the farm?
I'm asking you that question.
Yeah.
I didn't know it had a name.
Yeah, the farm had a name.
Yes, it did.
I didn't know it had a... I could look up the location name, but no, that's not
right. So I'll take it nobody knows the answer to that question, do they?
Well, is it Square Farm?
That's very clever bit of tactics there, Mary. Yes, it was Squire's Farm, yes. Right, Mary.
Yes.
After being struck by the Silurian, what did Liz say when she woke up? Was it, it was here, I saw it, it's you, or where am I?
Ooh. Is it you?
Oh dear, I've just opened that up in iTunes. Hang on. Oh, it's the right music for you lot.
Thank you.
What I meant to play was that. Interesting again, Mary, the options you were given, the actual answer game was not one of the options that were given. Right, so the options were...
The options were...
It was here, I saw it, it's you. Oh, what did you say?
Oh, it's you. Okay, well, I thought I heard you say, is it you?
No, and where am I? Right, so okay. Anybody for the actual answer?
I saw it.
Did you? But what about the answer?
I saw it.
Magic.
By the way, I posted the win. Master?
I don't know what he's doing. I'll be thrown up. He's trying to eat bits of bloody food off the floor. Stop it, you naughty dog. Did I give you a point for that one? Was it Kirby got the point of that one? I got completely distracted then.
You did? Why?
Right, so Andy's question. But before we move on to Andy's question, here's the scores. In last place with 5 points is Andy, and the only person still yet to play a joker. In third place with 8 points is Mary. Second place with 14 points, Kirby. And in the lead with 19 points, it's me. Next question goes to Andy.
Hi.
And it is this. What was Windmill 123?
It was the phone number of...
No. Do you know, Kirby?
I know. Yeah, of course I know. It's the helicopter that they're going to use in the next story as well.
It's the correct answer. Kirby.
Master.
What did the doctor compare the temperature in Quinn's house to?
Is like the reptile house in the zoo.
Sorry, I was just letting the dog out. Is the correct answer.
Of course it is. Now, did you hear me say that I posted the picture of the Winley Moore subtitle?
Yeah, we've seen that.
No, I'm not interested. Right, hang on, whose go was that?
That's because we were right.
Whose go was that last one for? Oh.
Me.
All right, so therefore, Kirby.
Master.
Have you answered that question? Wait. Oh, you've done that one, haven't you? Reptile House on the Zoo. We've done that one.
Yeah.
Right. Next question goes to Mary.
Oh, wait. No, I think that was Andy's and then
it
answered
it. It's my question that, Kirby got.
Right, okay. Stop interrupting. Sorry. Kirby, your question.
Master.
Reptile House on the Zoo. Right. When Major Baker came out of sick bay, who did the doctor order to accompany him back there? Was it Hawkins, Miss Dawson, Travis, or Robbins?
Name. Give me the names again.
Hawkins, Miss Dawson, Travis, or Robbins?
Hawkins.
Mary.
Yes.
What were the doctor's first contact words to a Silurian?
You know that one.
Are you a Silurian?
Andy.
I love that one.
What did Sergeant Hart do wrong? Probably about
getting
this one.
Know.
Oh, you do know. Good.
Oh, hang on a minute. Baker conned him into letting him go. Because he helped him put his jacket on. He punched him.
I'm going to give you that one. You should have played your joker. But the answer I had written down, which is essentially the same thing, is slightly more accurate, but I've still given you the points anyway, was allowed Major Baker to chop him on the neck and escape. Right, next question goes to Kirby.
Master.
What is the doctor's suggested course of action for the research centre?
I think I know.
Good, I hope you know, because I don't.
Ooh.
We just close it down completely. We close down Sector... Yeah.
Mary.
Yes.
Alright. What made the Doctor and Liz decide to stick rigidly to Quinn's route into the caves?
Oh, yeah. You should know this one.
Well, I know that they run into that dinosaur.
You seem to know the answer, Kirby.
Yeah, it was the pool of bubbling liquid that might or might not be acid.
Yeah.
Okay. Andy.
Okay.
What was Master's job in the government?
He was permanent undersecretary. Ah! Oh! Yes! Yes! I'm going to get there one day.
Put a big sticky note on your computer.
I know,
That's what I've done to remind me. Master?
How did Lawrence describe the Doctor to Masters?
Oh, I know.
Good, because I can't recall the phrase. Sorry.
And Mary?
He calls him a raving lunatic.
Furthermore, he also calls him insolent and impertinent. Yes, that's the answer. Right. Mary, your question.
Yes.
What did Miss Dawson tell the Doctor that he should tell the Silurians' intentions were?
Whoa. Ask that again.
What did Miss Dawson tell the Doctor that the... Sorry, I say that again in English. What did Miss Dawson tell the Doctor... What did Miss Dawson tell the Doctor that the Silurians' intentions were? Yeah, I got it out correctly that time.
To destroy the humans? I'm guessing.
Give it to her.
A bit more.
A bit more?
Yeah, a bit more. That's the first half of it.
Destroy the humans and, take over the Earth's surface.
I'm feeling generous tonight.
Yeah, be generous.
The answer was, we must destroy them
before they destroy us.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Andy.
Yeah.
You are feeling generous.
Yes. Right. Why did the Silurians go into hibernation? Andy, why did the Silurians go into hibernation?
Right, I'm playing a joke. It's because there was a small planet approaching whom they thought was going to wreck the environment, and it was actually the moon that approached instead. Again.
We all knew that one anyway.
I did.
Kirby.
Master.
I've lost where I was.
The moon.
Yeah, the moon, yeah.
The moon's an egg, you know.
All right, here we go. What happened to Robbins?
Robbins. I don't remember these various names. I'm sorry. I don't even know who he is.
No. Anybody?
I'll guess. Does he get infected?
Nope. The answer was he went a bit mad while trapped in the cave unit with the unit team. He went a bit mad while trapped in the cave with the unit team. Remember, they're all trapped in the cave.
Okay.
And right, okay. Right, whose go was that one? Was that yours, Kirby? So this is Mary's go. Yeah. Who was the first person to touch Major Baker when he arrived infected in Master's office? Was it the Doctor, the Brigadier, Masters, or Liz?
Masters.
Anybody? Hello, anybody?
No.
Oh, thanks for trying.
Well, he's the only one that was infected, so...
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Because the Doctor or Liz and the Brigadier were not infected, so how could they pass it on?
What the question is, it says the first person to touch Major Baker when he arrived, because he was infected, it says infected in Master's office. So he's arrived in the Master's office, he's infected, who was the first person to touch him? out of Brigadier, Doctor, Masters, or Liz?
Well, I already said Masters.
No, yeah,
so.
Well, you're out of that one. So anybody?
That's what.
So it's taking a very long time. This is anybody? Well, obviously Masters is out of the equation now. So is it the Doctor, Brigadier, or Liz that touches Major Baker when he arrives infected in the office?
Liz, I'll say Liz.
Oh God's sake! Hooray!
Wait, that was a guess.
He was the correct answer. Goodness. Right then, Andy.
Okay.
What hospital was Major Baker taken to? Was it Wingford, Wyndham, Wenley, or Wharton?
Wenley.
Kirby. Who played Captain Hawkins?
Oh, gosh.
Get this wrong and you're off the show for good.
Paul Darrow, obviously.
Mary.
Yes.
What type of antibiotic did they use to slow the development of the disease? Good question for a medical person.
What type? I don't remember.
I know, yes.
Oh.
Give it to Andy. I don't remember.
Yeah. Well, Andy. Andy's got it.
It was a broad-spectrum antibiotic.
It was a broad-spectrum antibiotic, yes.
Okay.
Andy. Oh, actually, yep. Should we do a score update? In last place with 13 points, it's Mary. In third place with 17 points, it's Andy. In second place with 23 points, it's Kirby. And then the lead with 27 points, it's me. Right, Andy. Okay. Not many questions left, by the way, listeners. They've all gone now, anyway. The one surviving listener, don't know who you are, but say hello anyway. Where are we? Yes. Where did Masters get a taxi to in London? So when he got to London, he got a taxi to somewhere. Where did he get it to?
Oh, it was Ministry of Science.
Kirby.
Master.
How long did the Doctor imply that his life had been so far?
I think I know.
Thousands of years.
Well, that'll do.
Several thousand years.
Yeah, he said several thousand years. Well, that'll do.
Yeah.
Mary, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Where was the first case abroad? Was it Paris, Vienna, New York, or Berlin?
It was Paris.
We're running to Paris.
Running to Paris.
Andy.
We're running to Paris.
Andy.
Andy.
Yeah. Actually, they had the runs in Paris.
Yeah. In the last, shut up, in the last episode.
I had the runs last week, so I couldn't join.
In the last episode, where did the Silurians want the Doctor to take him?
Oh, God. I've got a whole rack of things written down. There's various galleries and various cave mouths, so I'll go with cave mouth 2.
Anybody?
Haven't the foggiest.
Okay, no point for me. That's the nuclear generator. Right, Kirby. Oh. What surrounds the planet and filters out some of the sun's radiation?
Oh, I believe they got that wrong.
Yeah, they
in
do.
The script.
The Van Allen belt.
Mary.
Yes.
When the Silurian leader says, "You have destroyed the disperser," what did the Doctor say? Very quiet, isn't it?
I have no idea. Oh,
okay. Anybody?
You could say it the way Sybil Fawlty says it.
Go on, Em.
Yes, I know.
Right, next question goes to Andy.
Okay.
When the Silurian... No, not that one, sorry. Oh, no, actually, I've only got two questions left, so it doesn't go to you. So it's free-for-all questions. It would have been if I hadn't cocked up one of the previous questions. And if anybody listened to the previous time we did Silurians, they could have picked up most of these questions. They're most of them the same as last time. I did add a few, because I'm committed that way. But free-for-all questions. First one is, how did the Doctor solve the problem of the overload?
I know.
Oh, hang on. Andy knows.
He fused controls the neutron flow.
Yeah, not quite reversing polarity of things, but yes, that was the correct answer.
We'll get there eventually.
Last question. What job is Corporal Nuttin given?
I've run out of notes, so I haven't got a clue.
Don't know.
You might be able to guess, because it's the end of the story. So what job was he given to do?
To set off the bombs.
I'm going to give you that one. It's near enough. It was actually setting off the charges that blow up the Sidurian base. That's essentially right. So, at the end of the question asking part of the quiz, in last place, with 17 points, Mary. In third place, with 21 points, is Andy. In second place, with 28 points, is Kirby. But Andy predicted me and doubles to 42. Kirby predicted me and doubles to 56. Mary predicted Kirby and stays on 17. And I predicted Kirby and stay on 30. So the final score in this week's edition of You Won't Get This One to the one viewer is in last place, 17 points to Mary. In third place, for 30 points, is me. In second place, with 42 points, is Andy. The winner this week is Mr. I'm Never Going to Win the Quiz, But Still Do It Anyway, Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Hold on, Kirby.
Well, I didn't. This is one of those cases where I like this
story. Oh, we've gone up to two. Hello, two listeners, whoever you may be. It's probably half of the people on the show anyway. Okay, right, Doctor Who news next. Now, it's not exactly news, but of course I was at the Doctor Who Experience. The first time I've seen it since it's not been in London. And I did post some pictures on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join. Specifically because most people that go around the Doctor Who Experience and they do wide shots of artifacts and things. And I was looking at them. I was looking at the finer detail thing, like the threads of things and the cat badges on the Doctor's lapel and things like that. So I took some real proper close-up images. And I hope
liked your pictures.
I hope people enjoy those, because I enjoyed taking them and I enjoyed getting up and close to these particular artifacts, like the Fourth Doctor's scarf with the patches on and things like that. What I did notice, actually, about the Sixth Doctor's little pussycat badge compared to my one is that it's actually got little paws underneath, whereas mine hasn't got paws underneath. So it's not the best replica because it hasn't got that on it. That was a little detail. No, it's minor, but you know, Doctor Who fans are completionists, and I'm surprised they didn't pick up on the lack of little paws, little pink paw things underneath paw pads. But yeah, 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group. Have a look at my Doctor Who Experience pictures. Uh-oh. Yes.
Well, I had a question. I'm a little bit surprised, because when you did the live video, it was almost like you were running through there. I mean, it was just such a quick.
We'd already been around.
You were on the lower level, and then you went up the stairs and just basically ran through. And I was surprised you had time to go back and take all those pictures, because Alpha Deb seemed bored.
Well, we had been there for a while up to that point. I just thought, after going around taking the pictures of the lower levels and getting our pictures done with in front of the TARDIS, and that lovely picture of me and Isabella in the classic control room, which obviously was green screened, but it was fab anyway. We had a choice. That is there. The console is there. You can see it. There's a picture of. I took a picture of the console. But you have a choice of backdrops of various TARDIS interiors, and I just felt that one was the most magical out of all the backdrops. So we set up. But Isabella is just so fantastic at posing. She did a great Harry Potter pose, and we did our Harry Potter picture.
Yeah, so that was quite good.
She did a great pose in that. I didn't know what she was doing, because I was doing my pose. And when the picture came out and I saw her in that pose, I thought, that's a winner. I'm having that one. And it's just a lovely picture. And now they send you get the picture, a hard copy, and they send you via email a digital copy as well. So it's nice to be able to upload rather than having to scan it and on me thingy, a digital copy of that particular picture. But that is really good fun. They when me and Alicia went, they had a slightly different setup where you're in the TARDIS and you're I'm sort of leaning out and she's sort of flying off into space thing. That's not available anymore. But and that was all green screen anyway. I think they did have a TARDIS there. I can't remember now. It was a long time ago. But yeah, so we went round and then I thought, well, I better, we can go live. And Deb was quite keen on going live at that point. So I did a couple of liveies from there. We weren't allowed to film inside the actual experience itself, which is the experience is the part where you go into the TARDIS and you do the adventure with the Doctor and his little helper, which is obviously one of the people that has to do some acting and has a script to go by. And it does it really, really well. It works well. And some of the little visual effects they do with the TARDIS materialising and dematerialising and things like that. Because that is the actual experience. You move on then to the exhibition. So you're allowed to take pictures and stuff in the exhibition. So that's where, obviously, I was able to do the live stuff from. But I thought I'd take the pictures first, then do a livey. And we went up steps to the extension of the exhibition, which is all there, the, you know, the costumes and stuff are. So we'd had spent quite a lot of time in the place by then, so Deb had seen everything, so she just didn't fancy going back around and seeing it again while I did the filming, so she sat down. Isabella had a bit some fun actually in a Dalek, as you saw, and all in all it was very enjoyable. I did notice that in the shop there's lots of Lavazzi goodies for sale now, whereas previous time I went to the shop at
the favourite of our sponsors.
Yeah, so they had the scarves, they had the cricket jumpers, all the stuff we know. It's nice to actually be able to see all those Lavazzi items in the flesh. You know, when we went to Newcastle, we saw all the cosplayers, a lot of them wearing Lavazzi cosplay products, and it's good, expensive, but good quality. So that was really good. Yeah, I hope you enjoyed the live stuff. I enjoyed doing it. But the photos are the thing that is my forte. And I just, when I got back and reviewed the photos, I was quite pleased. Especially, you know, you get the close-ups of Missy's little badge and things like that, which you don't get to see. You don't get things like that in Doctor Who. You don't get to see things that close up. And that's what I wanted
to bring up. Master. Yeah. So if you were actually on green screen and not touching the actual control console, so what were you leaning on?
Wasn't doing anything. She just put me in position, told me to stand.
Oh, okay.
You did a good job because it looked like you were actually leaning on the console.
No, she just told me to put my hands. Told me what I was going to be doing in the picture, and just you know, told me to do that, and she did it. But although I could have physically touched it, it was only around the corner from where they did the thing anyway. So the actual console.
Did you see my comment on the video?
I couldn't see any comment. I couldn't see any comments because I had the phone. I was filming, so I had the phone away. I had the screen away from me.
I put the comment on way later.
Did you?
I said you should have had Isabella stand in front of the Silurian and say, "Amy, fall down to the ground."
Yeah, we didn't think about that. I did see that comment, but we obviously didn't think of that at the time. But yeah, it's all very good. There was lots of really good Pokemon. Isabella was absolutely delighted because she finally caught her Pikachu outside the door. Doorway to the
awesome.
Yeah. So that was quite good. And she'd been moaning for ages because she hadn't been able to get a Pikachu, where I had about 8 or 9 of the blooming things. So she was really, really
pleased. I don't have one.
No, don't you? Yeah. That was the Doctor Who experience. Talking of Turning Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, we've got new members to mention, which I haven't done for a long time. Let's see if I can remember. Remember the members. Right, okay, so we're default. No, that's not it. How do we do this? They come in a... Oh, join date. Here we are. Okay, I don't know when we last had a... 4 months. Have we done 4 months ago? Probably not, actually. So just in case... should we go back to Matthew Lawrence? That's going back to... Ashley Hughes added him 7 months ago, so... Sam Goswell, Michelle Eddy... Lacey Archer, who I added because her husband is a Doctor Who fan, and I don't think her husband's on. In.
I was going to drop out, going to storm me, so.
That's a shame. We're going to do a special competition that only you can win, Andy.
Well, see, that will storm again, and who comes first?
Okay.
quick one. Are we recording next week or not?
I don't know. I'll let you know. We have a thread to embark.
Okay, let me know. I'll be good tomorrow. But
hopefully so.
I'm gonna go. Anyway, good night, folks. Take care.
Goodbye.
Bye, Andy.
Bye.
John Loud, great name. Aaron Matthews, who I met up in Newcastle. Linda Hughes, who was the cosplay winner in Newcastle. Sam Stone, who is a author of horror and very pretty.
Yeah, I've heard her on other podcasts.
Very pretty lady. John Davey, who is a monster on Doctor Who. Ken Ormiston, who joined today, along with Mark Baumgarten. So welcome one and all to the Johnny Omega Mark Doctor Who Podcast Facebook group, which we now have 451 members.
Ooh.
A little insurgence of people in the group. Right then, news. Class has started. We'll talk about that. We'll try to talk about it in a bit more detail maybe next week, because I haven't really had a chance to view more episodes. John Pertwee has been honoured by DWAS. They've put a plaque up with his name on it, and a place where he used to work, which is the new Wimbledon Theatre. Well, maybe they should put a plaque up at Medina Theatre for one of the last places he worked, perhaps.
Ah, is that where you had that video?
Yes. They're talking about episode 3 of Class. How many episodes is that? 7?
How many? No, there's 8 total.
Oh, it's 8.
It's going to be 8 total.
Okay. Power of the Daleks to get Australian cinema showing. Was that the cartoon version?
Yeah.
Oh, I would hope so. I haven't seen that yet. Is it available?
No, not yet.
Okay.
Let me look and see when it's going to be available online.
There are some Class like novels coming out.
Like next. Oh, it gets released on the next Saturday.
What, on DVD?
No. Online.
Oh, okay. I probably won't get to see it then. Class novels coming out. Joyride, Stonehouse, What She Does Next Will Astound You. All written by, or created by Patrick Ness. One's written by James Goss. One's written by A.K. Benedict. And one's written by Guy Adams. 11th Doctor comic book is out. There's a load of BBC audios coming out. Invasion of Time. Time Meddler. Torchwood Tales. And 11th Doctor Tales, or these are obviously audio books of some variety. Christmas Special Sneak Peek. I haven't seen this yet.
I haven't seen that yet.
So I'm just going to play it. Oh, it's long. No, I'm not going to do that, actually, because it's too long. It doesn't really lend itself to an audio presentation.
How long is it?
4 minutes and 2 seconds.
Oh, okay. I'll watch it when we get offline.
Yeah, so that's on the DoctorWhoNews.net site. Doctor Who Humble Comics Bundle. In aid of children in need, the Titan Comics and Humble Bundle have announced the launch of the new Doctor Who Humble Comics Bundle, and it offers a collection of video games, books and comics at a price determined by the customer. Content is divided into 3 tiers. Pay $1 or more to purchase the first tier, pay $8 or more to purchase the second one, and 50 and so forth and so forth. I'm surprised it's dollars, because the Children Need is a British charity.
But Humble Bundle, I believe, is US based.
Okay. Original hardback novelizations to be republished. So they're going to do Doctor Who and an exciting adventure with Daleks. They're going to do Doctor Who and the Zabi, and they're going to do Doctor Who and the Crusaders.
I have it.
In hardback.
Target books, of course.
Mm-hmm. Power of the Daleks extra material. BBC Worldwide has confirmed the additional material that will be included in the release of the animated version of Power of Daleks. And it does look like it's coming out on DVD. Highly anticipated adventures will be released on BBC Store Saturday the 5th of November, exactly 50 years to the minute after it was transmitted on BBC One at 5:50 p.m. The UK release of the DVD will follow on Monday the 21st of November. Wealth of extra material will be available with both the BBC Store and DVD releases.
I wonder if we'll ever get a DVD over here of it.
Well, you'll probably get it through...
in another year or two, probably.
Alternative soundtracks, animated test footage, audio commentaries, booklet, original cinema scripts, original title sequence, new restoration, Power of the Daleks animation and photo gallery, Power of the Daleks surviving footage and original trailer, original Dalek voice session recording, Servants and Masters, making of Power of the Daleks, Telesnap reconstruction. Wow, they even put the reconstruction on it. You get a good bundle there for the DVD release, don't you? That'd be really
cool. Yeah, except I can't play it. it's a British
version. Oh, stop it. That will probably be available. Somebody will probably buy the British version and just be able to play it on their computer with Region 2 selected.
So are we going to actually go back and re-look at the story because of this release or not?
Not yet. No.
Okay.
We're too busy doing this. We might go back now when we feel like it. It's worth looking at, but I haven't got time to watch two Doctor Who stories at that particular time. I will
right.
probably
we,
be
we
buying.
Could go, we could go back to look at this one when we finish the journey.
Yeah, we could do, but I will say that I don't think it's good. I think the reconstruction was actually very good, so I don't think it'll be interesting to see if we can glean anything more out of it, because we have actually watched, obviously, the version of Power of the Daleks that they redid, didn't they, quite recently, which got kicked off. Various internet facilities, and I've listened to the audio, we watched the reconstruction, so it'll be interesting to see what it's like as an animated thing. Excited about it, but and I will watch it at my own leisure and maybe watch it again when we come to review it, after the journey. And we're a long way, it's a long way off, that is, by the way. Right,
a long way off.
Yep. I was going to do something then, I forgot what it was. Yes, it was sponsorship. I'm not going to do Audible anymore because they don't contact me, so how am I supposed to know whether it's worth doing it? So buy Audible. Right, whowon.co.uk.
Is that whowon.co.uk?
Which means I've got to do new disclaimer with Isabella.
Whowon.co.uk.
Yes, right, so new things coming out. It's Christmas, everyone, so if you want to buy a Doctor Who thing for your loved one, how about a 12th Doctor Sonic screwdriver at £14.99? That's on available pre-order, which is quite surprising because I have one on the desk here somewhere. So it must be a new version of the 12th Doctor Sonic screwdriver. Here's mine. It's rather cool, isn't it? Don't you think it's pretty? And it does that. Oh, it used to do it. Oh, there you go. Yeah, so that is the 4th Doctor Sonic screwdriver. It features green and blue light modes and sound effects. So what is different to the one that says it's on available, unless they sold out? And that's why it's on pre-order. Fifth Traveller, which is a story by Philip Lawrence, a Big Finish story of the First Doctor. And we got Revelli Conspiracy by Tom Kahn, or Robert, I don't know who that is. They've mixed the names up. Tom Selinsky, Robert Kahn, or is it Selinsky Kahn and Tom Robert? I don't know, they've mixed all the names up. Day of the Daleks by Terence Dix. Jago and Lightfoot 12. £35. That is.
Oh, Jago and Lightfoot are so much fun.
It's 300 minutes, 5 discs.
Yeah, it's good value. Memory Bank and Other Stories by Chris Chapman and all. Lots of Big Finish.
Oh, look, you can get Power of the Dalek.
Yeah, pre-order. £18.99. I'm going to have to get that. TARDIS Bowl, £5.99. And TARDIS Umbrella. These are coming soon products, hopefully in time for Christmas. Actually out now products are 8th Doctor Doom Collation, or Coalition, I should say. And there's the DWM 505, which I always recommend getting it from Who Won if you happen to live outside the UK. I don't think anybody ever pays attention to that, even though it's a really good bit of advice. DWM Special Invasion of Earth, Genesis Chamber. It's a 4th Doctor Big Finish story.
Mm-hmm.
History of Humankind, Justin Richards. Made for You by Guy Adams. New Adventures of Bernice Summerfield, Unbound Universe by James Goss and all. And yes. A pizza cutter. Sonic Screwdriver pizza cutter. Along with the TARDIS notebook and Time Lord Fairy Tales 2nd edition. So lots of really good things if you want to get your loved one who happens to be a Doctor Who fan something for Christmas. Don't you think?
Sounds good to me.
Whowon.co.uk.
Yes.
Now,
Master.
I've already mentioned Lavazzi. If you want to buy some Lavazzi, yes. Go to the Doctor Who Experience. If not, go to lavazzi.co.uk. Cosplayers, Lavazzi. Yes, Kirby.
Do you see the picture of my new cell phone cover?
I did see the picture of you. Did you get that from the Vasi?
Cool.
No, I didn't I got it from Amazon. It just took a lot of searching to get one.
I really don't think Amazon require advertising, to be fair. Because we had an experience with Amazon the other day, because Deb wanted to get tickets for Take That, which is a musical act. Now, they put on a thing that the tickets will go on sale on the Friday, but if you bought their forthcoming CD, you would get a code for pre-ordering, or no, pre-release, you know, what you call it, advance release. So we did buy the blimmin' CD, went online to buy the tickets. Deb selected VIP tickets in Birmingham, and after trying for about half an hour, it went through. Congratulations, well done, your purchase is complete, VIP tickets, bloody. And she was posting, we got VIP tickets to Take That, all excited. And I said, well, I'm not going to post anything yet, not until I've had some sort of email confirmation. And we got an email back from saying, sorry, an error has occurred. You have been reserved general admission tickets. So got back to them saying, well, this isn't fair.
No.
We've got confirmation saying VIP tickets. It says on the page on my account, VIP tickets, and you're saying an email saying that we got general admission tickets. So then we get another email come through saying, well, sorry for the error, we have reserved general admission tickets free of charge for you. So all in all, we ended up with free tickets for the concert, but even though she wanted the VIP ones, but still free, it's not bad, is it? So there you go. What else would I like to say? I don't know.
Words.
I went to Harry Potter. I don't know if it's Doctor Who related, or there's lots of crossovers.
Yeah, I haven't looked Harry at your Potter pictures yet.
There's lots of crossovers between Harry Potter and Doctor Who, especially in the acting environment. I noticed that Jimmy V has been in Harry Potter, but it wasn't credited. He played some sort of goblin, I think, in Gringotts. But yeah, another fab place to go. We were there for 5 hours, and the time just went, phew, you know, amazing. And it, you know, they talk about magic, such a magical place to be. The shop is amazing, although Deb wanted to get Alicia a Gryffindor scarf, and they'd sold out. They just advised us to buy it from the online store. What's the point in going to the shop if you buy it from the online store? Isabella got herself a Ravenclaw head girl badge, which she was wearing with great pride on top of a very expensive
Ravenclaw
gown, what they call it, the cloak thing, which cost £75. Yeah. So she wore it on her thing, and she lost it the following day at Black Gang Chine. Bearing in mind, they're not too bad expense-wise, they're about £7, but you get a rubber thing that goes on the back of the pin, and I thought that was a bit, that's really not going to keep it on a garment. It's too, you know, I know I've got some pin badges and they've got clips, so they are fairly bad at falling off, but the clips, at least they hold them in place. Mm. But a little rubber thing, anyway, she lost it. So I've got a Slytherin badge on my coat, and I keep on pushing the rubber thing back.
Yes, I imagine that you are Slytherin.
Yeah, I am Slytherin. Well, I can show you my wands, actually. I have this wand here. If you're watching on the thread, you might recognise it as being Lord Voldemort's wand.
I would, because I can't see the video.
Well, you will do at some point. You might see Isabella's photo with a dark mark, which I obviously got this wand. Never mind. So what was I on about before when I was about wands? Oh, Slytherin House, yeah. So I've got, I keep pushing the back on it. Anyway, I wrote to Warner Brothers studio tour thing and said, well, I went to try and reorder it. It's not available on the UK shop. It's available the Orlando thing. Well, it's no use to me. It costs, I can buy the badge quite cheap, but they're going to charge me £30 shipping for a little badge. So I was going to get one of you lot to order it and just send it over a lot cheaper. But I wrote to them and saying, well, this is really upsetting because I want to get another one, and it's got an inadequate back to it. It fell off really easy. She lost it after one day and she's really absolutely gutted. And they said, oh, very sorry to hear about that. Send us a photo of your receipt. And I did, and they're sending us a replacement.
Oh,
how nice. Yes.
So yeah,
free of charge.
Yeah, free of charge.
Wow.
Wow, indeed. So, but they do make a hell of a lot of money on some very expensive but beautiful items. It's an amazing shop. It's like a museum, but you can just buy everything in it. It's great. And I like this. Awesome. This is really cool. I got for my work. It's a Slytherin notepad. Yes?
Well, once you're done with that topic, I've got one more topic.
Oh, good. Is it Doctor Who related?
Yes.
Go on, then.
Over here, the reason we're not seeing Class on BBC America, they're holding that off on BBC America until new Doctor Who starts up.
Oh.
We're getting Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency, the redo of it, the 2016 redo, which, of course, is based on Douglas Adams.
Mm-hmm.
So the first two episodes have been broadcast. I've not seen them yet. I plan to watch them this next week, but it will be available for you on Netflix in December.
When you say it's based on Douglas Adams, do you mean it's based on Sharda?
Well, essentially, yeah. Mm. But don't you know the two books that he wrote? Dirk Gently's The Holistic Detective Agency.
Yeah, but I was on the impression that those books were based on Sharda.
Yes, the first book was based on Sharda.
Yeah.
And I don't know if these stories are going to be based on the book or just Dirk in general.
Okay.
But it is Doctor Who related because it is Douglas Adams.
Yes, thank you, Kirby. Right, I'm looking
we're not
at
me. At all.
I'm looking at my calendar
understand.
Now. I'm looking.
I didn't
at,
understand you.
Doesn't matter.
I said we're not stretching this at all.
No, I'm looking at my calendar. We could essentially and theoretically do an episode next Sunday on the 6th of November because I've just got my calendar says Dad's Death 2002, which is the anniversary of my father's death, which I'll be at work, so I can't really, and I can't do much about it. You know, it's just an anniversary. A bridal show event in the Botanic Gardens, which is attending, although I will be having dinner at my in-laws when I finish work. It is feasible that I could do a show that night, and I'd rather keep the weekly thing going if possible. And
I could do it.
And hopefully Debbie will be back by then. And so, if it's all right with you lot, I'm going to aim for doing the show on the 6th of November. And of course, if something crops up, I'll get banned by She Must Be Obeyed, then we'll just move it forward to the 13th. But if we aim for it, we'll schedule it in, as we did for this show, should have been last week, that should work quite well. What do you think?
Well, just as a heads up, I'm on call next weekend, so there's a possibility, you know, not a strong one, but there's a possibility that I might be at work, so right. We'll see.
I hope not, but we'll aim for that day anyway.
Yeah.
So get your videos out.
Yeah, I can definitely do it.
Ambassadors it means, of Death.
Oh, no, seven episodes.
Yes, I'm hoping I've already got a quiz written for this one. If so, I can just watch it.
We've done it before, so you might. I don't know.
Ah, good. In that case, I'll have to add some extra questions to it.
Yes.
If I have done it, of course. It's not definite that I have actually done them back.
Yeah, we didn't always do the questions, so.
Well, the thing is, I didn't always entitle the quizzes, so it makes it very difficult finding them. Anyway. So everybody, Ambassadors of Death, enjoy the story, please, because I enjoy it, because it's got all those... It's got the weird remixes of the theme tune in this one, including Stings
that's right.
All over the place. But, yes, you
Mary,
can say before
that means
I think
we will be back at our standard 3 o'clock.
Oh, yes, the
right.
Clocks again.
Yeah, because we'll be... Our clocks will have changed by then.
Don't worry, we'll verify the time at some point during the day.
No, we don't need to, we know.
Well,
yeah.
I needed to this week because you all got confused, didn't you?
No, well, I was never confused.
He never was. I was the confused one.
Good. All right, then. So until next week, hopefully, thank you for listening to the show. And hopefully Paul and Debbie will be on. Fingers crossed. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Fancy Pants.
Thank you. The Tony McBride Doctor Who podcast is an avvservices.co.uk production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. The Tony McBride Doctor Who podcast is sponsored by whoone.co.uk, lavazi.co.uk and audible.com. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.